recognize, though I cannot name it yet, I know it. Beautiful is what you are, only somehow wearing a frightening disguise. I can see the winter in your eyes now, telling me, thank you, we're done here, not much to say. We are together, but I have had dividing days. Was it on the church step? Suddenly you're out of love. Does it go creeping slowly? When was your dividing step. Did it happen right away? Were you lying next to me, hiding what you couldn't say? How could I have guessed? Was my cheek upon your chest? An ocean away. When was
Yeah, well, we've moved over away from the microphone now. I mean, it is that song. It's just so astonishing, I, because it encapsulates so many feelings that are very hard to express in such an original way, doesn't it? And it's the first indication in the show with Margaret Johnson that you know, we realize as members of the audience that all is not well with her marriage. I don't want to give too much of the plot away, Lucy.
Sure.
Lucy Schaefer, anyway, thank you for doing that.
Pleasure.
Now, she's an embraceable character, isn't she? She's someone who, even though she hasn't been dealt all the best cards, has a great zest and joy for living.
She's the best of a Southern woman, really. That warmth, a sense of humor, yet contained because, well, 1953, you know, the woman's place. Mm. But yeah, I think she's, especially in Elizabeth Spencer's writing, she's quite progressive. You know, she's always practical, always thinking ahead, and she wants and reaches so much all the time. And whether or not those cards that you said she wasn't so so given in life,
yes.
She's still looking for them. She may bluff, but she's looking for them.
Yeah, and there is that feeling that she, with her relationship with her daughter, there is that feeling that she just wants her daughter to have everything that she hasn't had.
Happiness.
And then some.
Yes, absolutely. And isn't that what we all want? That's the whole point. I think that's the key, is the fact that everybody knows that what they want for their children is what we have had, what we haven't had, and yet, as you say, beyond that. And that's our goal. And so I think everyone, even kids in the audience, can say, oh yeah, parents, what a pain in the backside. And I understand why she's trying to limit her daughter, but yet I understand.
Yeah.
Because all she does is just love her, you know, from head to toe.
And it's very hard to let go, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, any parent will
Well, and not only parental issues, it's, you know, letting go and letting go of the things that inhibit us from being the full human being that we are. Mm. Whether it's Clara looking for her light in the piazza, or Margaret learning from her own daughter that light still is possible.
Mm. Now, it's a stonking role which won a Tony Award for Victoria Clarke in New York. Did you see that production?
I did indeed, because my good friend Aaron Lazar was playing the Fabrizio, He and I had done the On the Town at E&O together.
Ah, yes, of course. Well. one of the things about you, Lucy, that, I mean, you actually once very kindly sent me a card from Hamburg, because I wrote a review of about you in the Knot Garden, Michael Tippett, in the Limbury studio at Covent Garden, and I said something about, I couldn't believe this was the same woman who'd played Claire de Lune in On the Town. What was your background in the sense of, you know, it's clearly an operatic voice, but there is a real understanding of show style.
Well, I always thought that Julie Andrews was going to come through the door and save me and make me a star at age 5. I mean, musical theater was always my love. And my first job was doing 4 shows a day, 7 days a week in an amusement park, dancing and singing in sequin leotards, you know.
Wow.
But then I went to Northwestern, and I was naive. I thought, you know, the music school wanted me, but I thought that I could just go over and take, you know, theater classes. And at that time, Northwestern didn't have the music theater degree. So I was always singing at the music school, but going over to the theater department to do other shows, you know, be it Sarah Brown or, you know, all that sort of thing. And then I got swept up in the opera world, because what actually takes my heart is new music. I want a future for our business. I want to support the composers who are writing today. That's my love. That's my passion. And then all of a sudden, you know, all my work with Kiri and with Placido, it took me in a different direction, which was terribly exciting. But why this job is so important to me is it embraces everything. I can be all the things I want to be vocally and all the things I want to be dramatically. Hmm. And I'm working with a living composer.
Yes.
See,
yes.
To me, that's it.
Well, that's what we're all trying to get across with this piece, because there are some very talented, I mean, Adam is exceptional, but there are some very, very talented young writers out there, and getting the chance, getting a platform for their work is really tough nowadays. It is unusual, this role, in the sense that it is written for a soprano. It's written to use that head part of the voice. Mm. But as we heard in Dividing Day, then there is a wonderful heartiness in the chest as well. So you've got both going on, but primarily you couldn't sing it unless in the right keys anyway.
Yes,
unless you
absolutely, because some of the pieces, you know, just sit in, without getting too technical, just that upper passaggio, you're always just in the upper part of the staff, so you have to have a mix that allows you to keep the text clear, because if you stop telling the story, what's the point? And and that's what's fascinating, that Adam wants that. You know, he wants the clarity of a rich sound without ever losing the story, and it's so nice not to be saying, oh, well, here we go, here's the opera singer, you know, and it's, but that's not the point.
Yeah.
He wants all the colors.
It's interesting to hear him talk about how tough lyrics are for him, because he's such a great lyricist.
Oh,
I mean, in that song alone, I mean, there's some phrases I'd scribble down, you know, thank you, we're done here.
Yes.
I mean, that is so, I mean, it's bald and it's there, but, you know, the winter in your eyes you know, was my cheek upon your chest an ocean away. I mean, this
literally
is poetry,
and figuratively,
isn't it?
Yes.
You know. Great stuff for you to embrace.
What a gift. What a gift.
And I mean, we come to the moment in the show where she does let, we're not giving away plot here, but where she does finally let Clara go. And there's an 11 o'clock number called Fable.
Yes.
Which, funnily enough, I heard someone doing cabaret recently, transposed down a fifth.
Holy smokes! What was she down in the basement, you know?
So that shows you what we've both been saying,
yes,
about how it,
yes,
unusually.
Well,
this
the climax
is
of Fable, you know, it's a piece of stamina, not only of storytelling, but of stamina. And because when you get to the end, where the moral of the story comes, if you will, without it being in big quotes, because it's not, because Adam's far too clever for that to happen. Mm. You know, you're up on an F sharp, so you're not So you're not in belt range, and you're not in high range where you can actually let it rip. You're in that, which is why it's so clever, you see. It's in that range just where you have to support it in that most compressed sort of air way, which is Margaret. She's contained, but yet in her contained space, she's finally free.
Mm. What are the words? Remind us of the words. Of
the beginning
climax,
of it? Or
at the climax of it. Because it's it's a song basically about, you know, it's to some extent a song about disillusionment.
Absolutely,
of
and
love,
self-forgiveness.
You know, love's a fable, that's why it's called fable.
But no matter what, you can't stop looking. You can't stop reaching. You can't stop, don't ever stop. And the point is, if you find in the world, in the wide, wide world, that someone sees and someone knows you, love. Just love if you can and be loved. And isn't that the point? Without it being sugary sweet, without it being American, hard on the sleeve sort of.
But you're getting choked up just saying it.
Well,
in the audience, when I saw it, it just dissolved me.
Because we don't say those things out loud.
Yeah.
And we know it, but when someone looks you in the face and says, accept it, I know who you are, and you have to open and let that in, well, you know, then the possibilities are there for you now. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no going back.
Julian Kelly, I know you're in your element as music director of this show to have that rare thing, a proper acoustic orchestra of 15, which may not sound a lot to people, but it is a lot in today's world. I mean, rarely do we see a band of that size. I mean, the largest Broadway band ever was probably 35, was it, or 37? Either Carousel or The Most Happy Fella, one of those shows anyway. But how does it feel? And I know you insisted that was a priority for you and Paul Kerrison with this show. Because it's lush, isn't it, this score?
Yes, and I don't think the number 15 was arbitrarily assigned. I think that it was an expression of the composer's ambition to tell the story with the orchestra as well. So there are 8 stringed instruments and also a piano and a guitar. People talk about the lush string arrangements, but the score evolved from piano writing and guitar writing as the composer's expression of his understanding of the emotional content. So the piano is terribly important. Mm. But the strings give it a depth and a warmth and also a cinematic sweep. Mm. Similarly, the harp writing, some beautiful skeletal and delicate moments as well. We have extremes of chamber music textures, but also gestures that are symphonic in conceit.
Mm. Well, let's just tell people, as they've been listening to this and probably, I hope, had their appetites whetted, it is a very special score, a very special moving show, and no corners are being cut here in Leicester for it. And I want you to just round things off here, Julian, for us with a motif. It comes from the title song in the show, but it's a little motif that reoccurs through the show on the words, which including the words, the light in the piazza, and it's so beautiful. This is kind of the last thing we hear after Margaret's big number at the end.